Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is your girl DJ Carmi of KPTR Party Train Radio, and you're tuned in to KPTR, the truth behind the music. And today we have with us, this is a candidate for the U.S. Senate in Washington State, and her name is Gigi Ferguson. And first of all, I want to say, Gigi, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, DJ Carmi, for having me on the show this morning. I truly appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. And first of all, we just want the audience, our listeners, just to know something about you. And we want to go back to the beginning of, you know, tell us something about yourself, starting from a young age.
Well, I started at birth. I was born in the projects in Chicago with a midwife and my mom. And as I was thinking recently, I thought, you know, both of my feet, I was born pigeon-toed. So both my ankles were broken and I was in a cast after birth.
Wow.
And that too, I was crying and my eyes turned crossed. I had four brothers. And myself, we lost our mother to cancer when I was 7 and a half. I was adopted out actually by my biological father. It was in those days when they first started with the welfare program, and the fathers could not be in the home. So my father got in the home, as a matter of fact. If they would do midnight raids, and if the father was in the home, the mother was cut off of the welfare program. So a lot of black fathers disappeared. And I think back, and when, you know, is that where that song came from, Papa's a Rolling Stone, wherever he laid his hat? And I think a lot of times, a lot of our young black men, roll with that because their father was not home and it's gone generational. But my dad and I were homeless for a while. My brothers and I were all separated. And we moved from place to place. He wasn't ready to be a new dad. He didn't have the job background for that. And I stayed with my grandmother for a bit until he got himself ready. And I went through what children would go through, losing their mom and their dad. And but I tell you what, it made me strong. It made me a strong person. And I just became very involved with things going on. My dad was an alcoholic. But he tried to really put a lot of me around a lot of positive people and in a lot of positive environment. So I had a lot of positive that was being intermingled with that negative. And I'm grateful for that because I think that's what has helped me to be as strong as I am. I was also in the busing program in Chicago. And when I was in driver's ed, my teacher asked me to go to this meeting, and it was something the governor of Chicago was starting. It was the Illinois Youth Traffic Safety Council. And from there, I was elected to be in our community as an officer. And my dad and I got into it, and I ended up in a boarding school. I just was tired of the abuse, and I fought back. And I ran away from home, and I ended up in a boarding school, and I called the governor's office and let them know, I can no longer do this program. I'm no longer in Chicago. I told them what happened. They asked me, where was I? And I told them. And they said, you know what? Hold on. And the lady came back and said, the governor said, we don't have anyone in that county representing his program. So you're now the new liaison to the governor, and you have that entire county. So I worked in a county in Illinois where blacks were told to be out of town by sundown, and it was still on the records. But I was able to work with the Illinois State Patrol and get a lot of things done with the youth to try to get them involved and understand how alcohol and drugs were getting our youth killed and, you know, the impacts of that. And I've just
and how
had
old
this for
you?
Youth.
Right. How,
16.
Let's say, how young were you?
I was 16 years old.
Wow, 16. With that much on your plate?
Yes.
Incredible.
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And I was reading your biography, and I did see where it said that you served as an assistant mayor in Mainz, Germany.
In Mainz, Germany, in our housing division, yes.
Could you
in
tell us more about that?
As assistant mayor, I helped as the liaison for our housing community. We had a number of buildings of military families. And so we were the mouthpiece or the voice between the housing area and the general over the military base. And so I assisted our mayor in being that voice. Sometimes I was called because of domestic violence to work with families if the MPs had been called. We set up programs in the community for families. There was a lot. It was more of a community liaison. And I was 21.
Wow. So much.
21, 22.
Yeah, you were pretty young doing all of that. So, and I definitely commend you on that. And I noticed that you did not only a lot of work. And you said Mainz, Germany. I want to make sure I say that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But you also did things throughout the United States with communities.
Every place we've been, every place I've ever been, I've always wanted to be a part of the community as a give back. My family was in Baltimore. My aunt, my great aunt, who helped raise me in the summertime, is a Delta. I'm a Delta also now. And so when I was in Baltimore, I was active with my great aunt with Meals on Wheels and, you know, activities the Deltas were doing as I grew up. So It was interesting because I pled to Delta in 77, and my great aunt had all her friends there the December because I was supposed to have gone online before we went home for Christmas. So while at Christmas, I was with her, and all her friends were there, and they were starting to say something. I was like, hold on, I'm not online yet. I'm not online.
Right.
It was a lot of fun. So I've always connected in the community here in Washington State. My husband was is stationed here at Fort Lewis. I have been involved with Fort Lewis. I've been involved with the city of Tacoma. I just am involved wherever I go. And part of that is I know that if people had not poured into me during the time that I was with my dad and he was being alcoholic and abusive, my life would be totally different. I know I would be a statistic. And because of people who took me in when I couldn't take anymore, and because of people opportunities I ended up with because of that. I met Ernie Banks when I was little on the golf course. and just different things. And people said things to me, like Ernie Banks, I remember him telling me, you know, God is going to take you far, but I need you to understand, no matter how many steps you go up, no, I think it was Ernie Banks, he says, you'll go far and you're going to go up the ladder of success. He said, but remember, every person you step on the way up will be there to step on you on the way down. So I really try to make sure I don't step on people, but I engage people. I love people. I embrace people as much as I can as in everything that I do. And my grandmother used to tell me, for every step someone knocks you down, you better make sure you get back up too. And
absolutely,
that has also been where I've had so many issues and attacks coming at me, as a black woman that has not been involved in politics in Washington State, coming in and running for a federal seat, because I started running for U.S. Congress in 2012 because I heard the Spirit tell me to, the Spirit of God tell me to. I know where I was, what the lighting was. I mean, I will never forget that. And I'm like, who, me? I don't know anything about this. I don't even like politicians, God. You know, I'm in the background doing the work. I'm in the background fighting for people as a marriage and family therapist and chemical dependency counselor. And, I mean, I have fought some battles. I've lost some. I've won some, but I never stop. And I'm like, I don't want anything to do with politics. But he said, I want you to run for Congressman Norm Dix's seat. And I thought, oh, this is not God talking to me. I rebuke you, Satan. And it was 3 months later, Norm Dix announced his retirement.
Wow.
And
I'm glad that you began talking about it, because I was getting ready to ask you, when did you make the decision to run for Senate?
So I ran for the House in 2012 as a Democrat. I was working 55 hours a week, going into people's homes and working with families who had lost their children to the state. So I was working 55 hours a week. I'm used to giving. I did not want to ask people for money, so I raised $900. I was running against a millionaire where the district was gerrymandered for, and I had, I believe it was 8 or 9% of the vote, and I kept him from getting 50% of the vote by 7%. And people were, wow, who is she? Where does she come from? Because but they don't realize I've been volunteering in the background doing the work in the trenches long before, over 30 years. And so, well, all my life, but in this community, over 30 years. And so the Democrats were so not nice to me that I started looking for another option. And I found there was an independent, that there was something called an independent. And that was Bernie Sanders. And I started studying him. And so I said, okay, I'm going to run as an independent for 2014. And I had less than 4,000 votes. And I think people thought it was a fluke what happened in 2012, because that's all they would talk about was 2014. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, I went to the caucus, and someone was speaking out and negatively. And I said, you know, sir, I raised my hand, and I said, you know, sir, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with just about everything you said about Bernie Sanders, because none of that matches what I've read about him. I said this man was fighting for civil rights, not far
right.
from where I lived in Chicago when I was growing up. I said, so you can't tell me this man is not what he's saying. And when I finished speaking, people started clapping. But I was thinking, oh, my goodness, I came here to be quiet. And I ended up being a Bernie Sanders delegate. But I could not go to the national or run for the national because all of our money, my husband's money and my money, was going to the campaign. My husband is old enough to have retired by now. He was a Vietnam vet. His family were sharecroppers. And, you know, he's working as a letter carrier, but he's continuing to work to help fund me to run for office. And so last year I'm like, okay, I quit. I'm not doing this anymore. But I had realized I've had a major impact on the man that was in office. And I'd had it come back to me from people who didn't know that I was the person who had been running against him. And every time he lied, I put it out there. Every time he exaggerated, I put it out there. Everything, every comment he made, even when I was in D.C., saying, I need you to get on the Voting Rights Act. And his chief of staff said, we have Congressman John Lewis in Atlanta, isn't that enough? And I'm like, what do you mean, isn't that enough?
Wow.
I went to a delta that's in the U.S. House that said, you know what, this is what this man has told me. I went back to the deltas in D.C. and announced that. And he found out, okay, this person that we don't know that we don't think knows anything, she knows people who have some pull. Because every single time he lies and he has black people believing he's doing this and that, they weren't expecting me in D.C. So I come back and ask the black community, you all keep supporting this man. Does he have anyone black in his office? And they're like, no, he has someone black working for him in D.C. No, he doesn't. Yes, he does. No, I was just in his office. No, he does not. And I let him know I was coming another time, and he had a black woman, very heavy set, in a very small desk. With nothing on the desk. She looked like she was almost at a school desk, out of place, no papers on the desk, no anything. It was like, we're going to place someone black in the office so you see someone black in the office. So you can't say I don't have anyone employed, but you're going to tell me you're working for a U.S. House rep and you're sitting at this tiny desk. I can see your legs and everything, and there's not one piece of paper on your desk? Please, come on. I'm not stupid.
Yeah.
So,
and that is so sad.
And so as a Bernie-crat, I was called and asked, did I want to run, be a governor or a U.S. senator? And I had the feeling I was supposed to be moving up to senator that day. And I had a confirmation with a woman who followed me a mile and a half and said, God spoke to me and told me, you can't stop. And I'm like, huh? And she had this conversation, and I'm like, wow, that's kind of confirmation of what I heard. And then I get home, and I get him asking me this, and I said, okay, U.S. Senate. And I'm like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. But yet I knew I had finally figured out why I'd gone through everything I'd gone through when I was growing up and why I have experienced everything that I have experienced. And I realized because I've always been a voice, and this is a setup for where this has been a setup for where I'm supposed to go. And I'm looking at, you know, number 45 in office, and I'm thinking, you know what? I would not be there quiet. And
absolutely.
If I went there as a Democrat or a Republican, I would have to be quiet because I would have to do what the party wants me to do. And just as they have told the Democrats to tell Senator Warren, you need to calm her down, I don't need them to tell me to calm down when we have the 13th Amendment with when President Clinton enacted his policies, which has started the pathway from high school to prison. So we now, you know, because the 13th Amendment says that they've abolished slavery unless they're convicted of a crime. So they have targeted our black men. And we have black men going to jail being charged felonies on crimes when other people are being charged a little bit more than a misdemeanor. They may spend a year, but they're not charged with a felony. And I've learned that this is because the private prisons, and private prisons are actually suing states that don't send them enough prisoners. And these private prisons, a lot of people think, yes, and a lot of people think all the jobs are going overseas. Manufacturing jobs are going to the prisons across the United States.
Now, that's some incredible information. And I'm so glad that you brought that up. And to be honest with you, I think your story is incredible. Now, we have already passed halftime. So we're still going to go ahead and play our halftime track, but when we come back, because the time is limited, we want you to go talk a little bit about this hip-hop politics. The song I'm about to play is from someone that is actually in that project. His name is Seven the Panther, and the name of the track is They Don't Know. So don't you all go anywhere, because when we come back, we're going to be talking more with Jennifer D.G. Ferguson on the new projects and why should she be in the U.S. Senate for Washington State. So bear with us. They Don't Know coming up next.
But these losers ain't stopping my side. They don't know, they don't know. I paid the price for the life I was living, had to swallow my pride. They don't know, they don't know. So come ride with me, like the haven, let me tell you my side. They don't know, they don't know. They don't know, they don't know. They don't know. They don't know, they don't know.
I came
know.
A prophet in my peers, still somehow the leader.
How?
They see me now when in their eyes I'm an underachiever.
Lies.
But I made it through poverty, jail, and no home to be one of the illest of spitters. Just peep the growth,
home, growth, home.
I remember beans and rice, hella nice. Sins of the father I repay, but couldn't tell the price. Fighting for survival here only made me a felon twice. Broke life, make the smallest jokes the most compelling height.
Oh.
Compelling height.
Oh.
I told my mama not to worry, grabbed the mask and the cannon, hit the corner in a hurry, flying 100 miles an hour, knowing my aperture adjustment couldn't be trusted, so the vision blurry, vision young and reckless. I was driven by my need to stack green and the death wish.
Uh-huh.
I never blew the candles to receive, but I'm left with watching my mom struggle, pray the lights work when I hit the switch, or kick your homies door and fry him if he flinch an inch.
Go, go.
They were praying I was finished, but these losers ain't stopping my side.
Nah.
They don't know, they don't know. I paid the price for the life I was living, had to swallow my pride. They don't know, they don't know.
No,
so come ride with me, like the haven, let me tell you my side. They don't know, they don't know,
nah.
They don't know,
they don't know,
they don't know.
Man, so what to do? School ain't a priority. It's either that or pulling your brace to evils that destroy you,
uh-huh.
That destroy you, man.
Hey. The choice is easy when you numb, chasing bread, but they hogging all the lows, leaving crumbs, penthouse dreams. My reality probably death in the slum. Already live on the run, all that's left to overcome. Cause watching my babies grow got me thinking on another level. No drugs, no guns, temptations, just another devil. Spewing wicked matter, oh my God, status fall back in tool time. If I ain't getting mine, and they all rack. Shots never in the passenger door, and screw the driver too. Just giving y'all the facts of the hammers, but that was fire too. Fire, homie, I'm grown now, I need a little more now, more. So I refuse to ever slow down. Traded in the Mac for a mic, it's about to go down. Just do the math, you will see the answer as it's known now. Go!
They was praying I was finished, but these losers ain't stopping my side. They don't know, they don't know. I paid the price for the life I was living, had to swallow my pride. They don't know, they don't know. So come ride with me, like the haven, let me tell you my side. Cause they don't know, they don't know. They don't know, they don't know. They don't know, they don't know. They was praying I was finished, but these losers ain't stopping my side. They don't know, they don't know. I paid the price for the life I was living, had to swallow my pride. They don't know, they don't know. So come ride with me, like the haven, let me tell you my side. Cause they don't know, they don't know. 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 They don't know, they don't know.
All right, once again, that was Seven the Panther. The song is called They Don't Know, and we are now back with Miss Jennifer Gigi Ferguson. She is a candidate for the U.S. Senate in Washington State. So, Jennifer, tell us a little bit more about this hip-hop and politics that you're involved in.
Well, hip-hop and politics was the brain idea of hip-hop artists Helen Kane, who I've come to know and love, because she's like, you know what? You are a politician for the people. And people need to know you're a politician for the people. And she's the number one hip-hop artist, female hip-hop artist here in Washington State. And she said, you know, hip-hop was started to be a voice for artists, to speak out and educate people about politics, because we didn't know about politics. And she said, but I think we need to use that same platform to reach people who no longer feel like they have a voice, people who don't vote, people who don't understand. And so this is going to be an event where all of the artists are, you know, doing hip-hop, and they will be talking about the politics, and people will have an opportunity to meet me, to talk with me, to ask me questions while we're there. We're also promoting Black vendors, small vendors, and bringing them in so that people will have the opportunity to see some of our local vendors, small vendors, especially Black and brown people, and support their stores and learn about what they're doing. Because both of us are really all about the people. And I'm understanding this is going further than just Washington State. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. You know, this is so incredible. And we're, you know, getting ready to. It's crazy where the time just went. It just flew by. So we're soon getting ready to end the interview. I just want to say thank you so much again for what you're doing. I believe that you are right there in the path where you're supposed to be. You've gone through a whole lot. You've seen it all. So you would be the one, because you feel the people's pain. And I just want to encourage the audience to please go and visit her social media links. Check her out. Check out the Hip Hop and Politics, maybe possibly if you want to get involved. Gigi, we wish you nothing but the best, and we really hope that you can get up there and get in one of those Senate seats in Washington State. And we truly once again appreciate you coming on this show.
I thank you very much. And you know, just real quick, people are talking a lot about Bitcoin, and we're hearing a lot of different things about it. If people will come and sign up on my website, GG for Senate, I want to do so. I've gotten together with someone going to help people to possibly get into it for zero money. But they're going to have to be linked to our campaign in order for that to happen, because I'm about trying to help our people move out of poverty, help 99% move out of poverty, because otherwise they're taking us down the road to take us backwards 50, 60 years.
Right.
And I want to fight that. I'm going to fight that. So we have something exciting coming up, but we need people to sign up on the website, ggforsenate.us. And I thank you so much
for
giving me the opportunity.
You
and I thank
are
people
welcome.
For listening.
It was our pleasure. Make sure you guys go and check out the website, Gigi, that's G-I-G-I, for Senate. Go there, check out the website. Go ahead and get your account so you can start playing with the Bitcoin. I'm actually a huge fan of Bitcoin. So she's absolutely right. I think it's something that's going to really help us create wealth if we use it right. And we're going to go ahead and end the interview. But if you, for the ones that may have missed the show, we will be airing it tonight on PartyTrainRadio.com at 7 p.m. Eastern. So with that being said, we want to wish you the best, Gigi, and we are out. One love to all.
Love to you also. Bye-bye.